This is A Smaller Life, a podcast about making more conscious and more ethical choices within our crafts. Hosted by me, Saskia de Feijder. I'm a small business owner who wants to grow by going smaller. Together with local makers, I make tools, yarns, and accessories for knitters that want to buy less, buy better, make more, and make it last, keeping away the overwhelm and all the ridiculousness of overconsuming within our crafts. In the podcast, I endeavor to answer the question we ask ourselves before we start a project. What do we buy? Where do we buy? Who do we buy from? Or don't we buy at all, but use what we already have? Because when you think about what you do, you take more time and end up with less of everything. As a result, you'll get a smaller life. Well, hello, everybody. So good that you are back, or welcome if you are a first-time listener to A Smaller Life. I hope you like what I'll have in store for you today. I'm actually kind of positive that you like it, because on this episode, I talked to Julia Billings, aka Jules, of Woolen Flower, who is, if anything, one of the most friendly people I've had the honor to meet. But she's also very knowledgeable, a wonderful teacher, a designer and dyer of natural dyed yarns, and she makes woolen pouches, usually from pre-loved tweeds. And I might have collected a few of them. I have actually been on the other end of almost everything that she does. I've been her students, I've bought her yarns, I've sold her products, and I've sold alongside her on the Enemur Yarn Festival and Yarndale. I love everything that comes out of her hands. She is wonderful, and I'm positive you love her too. So let's not dilly-dally and go over straight away to my conversation with Jules. Hi, Julia.
Hi, Saskia. How are you?
So good to have you. Why don't we start off like you would expect, by introducing yourself to the people who haven't heard of you, and tell us a little bit about your work.
Sure. So I'm Jules, or Julia Billings is my full name, but most people call me Jules. I have a small business called Woolen Flower, which is a natural dye studio, and I'm based in Glasgow in Scotland, but most of you will probably pick up from my accent that I'm not Scottish. I'm actually Australian. My husband and I moved here about 5 years ago to Glasgow, and really just for a new adventure. We were very comfortable and led a pretty quiet life at home, but we wanted to spend some time moving and challenging ourselves in a different place. And we both just fell in love with Glasgow and Scotland as a whole. My background is in horticulture and herbal medicine, so very plant-based. I started knitting about 15 years ago, and while I was working and studying horticulture, and kind of those two loves, I suppose, of knitting and plants have kind of grown side by side, and done quite a lot of knitting teaching over that time, and just exploring the internet world of knitting and all the things that you can learn, and was lucky enough to travel for a bit through some really interesting knitting kind of related places like Shetland and also Iran. And then when we moved here, I was planning to get horticultural work, and found it a bit difficult. I suppose it was midwinter, and so I thought, I'd signed up just before we came here. I'd signed up and was really lucky to be accepted to have a small stand at Edinburgh Yarn Festival, like the tiny stand where you just turn up with your bag and it's not much
stuff.
And really, I just mostly did it as a way to meet local knitters. I wasn't sure, as an Australian coming to Scotland, whether or not I'd have any opportunity to teach knitting here, just because I figured every Scot was probably born with knitting needles in their hands.
Ouch.
Totally terrible for the mother. But realised quite quickly that there were still opportunities there. So I launched a little business run from home, where I made little pouches out of reclaimed Harris tweed jackets and things. And we're still doing a little bit of natural dyeing in that time. But slowly I've transitioned more from away from the pouches and more towards dyeing. And midway through last year, I moved into a studio in Glasgow, in the east end of Glasgow. So I have a space where I dye yarns using all natural dyes, and hopefully my aim is really to also use the space for teaching, because I love teaching people about natural dyes. But obviously at the moment we're just feeling our way through that like everything else.
So. Yeah. Do you have any experience in teaching online? Because you don't only teach dyeing, right? You also teach technique.
Absolutely. So I teach quite a bit of knitting technique and things. And I have done a little bit. I've done a little bit for other people. I'm a little nervous. I'm quite shy at the end of the day. And I think navigating an online group and, I feel like, in person I can connect with each person and I can feel that I can, make that connection and put everyone at ease. But I suppose I just feel a little bit more nervous about doing that online. I think I know my own experience has been really positive, but I just need a bit of a kick, I think, to get the online classes going.
Yeah, and you can take somebody to the side if you're in a room and have this, you have a different kind of connection. So yeah. I do think that teaching online and communicating online is the next level up from commenting on social media. Yeah. So I think it's a great way to really connect with people, but obviously there's a layer that's not there. And then with hands-on, work, then it's also a lot easier to show somebody how to do things. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, like you say, there are pros and cons or strengths and weaknesses. And I do feel, I think on Instagram and things like that, you can be very, oh, this is so pretty and this is so lovely. But I think it is important to also, have a bit of an influence in terms of what it is that you feel is important in the way you do things or why you choose that or whatever. And perhaps that's, an online class is a really great way to do that. I hadn't thought about it.
And I think the way it's a tool, like Zoom, or it's a tool. And some tools you use differently than other tools. And I think this past year I've done a lot of learning online, and I've learned a bunch of things because I put my mind to it and this was the tool that was available to me. And who knows that if I went to a classroom and saw a teacher speak, I'm not sure. Sometimes it's better, sometimes it's not. It depends on how you use the tool. From your classes, because I've been lucky enough to be in some of them, I think it's a really the cozy atmosphere. In a way, you can totally get that online, but like it's hanging out together as well. Yeah. There's just this extra vibe. Yeah. So, are you looking forward to going? Are you going to go back to teaching? How's this? What's happening in the teaching realm of knitting right now?
Yeah. In the UK at the moment, in Glasgow, we've been the last place actually in the UK almost to go back to stage two of restrictions. So it still feels quite new, I think. I think I've been quite hesitant or just waiting to see what will happen. I'm certainly planning to do some dyeing classes this year in the studio, but only very small numbers because we can be, I've got quite a large room. We can actually be together, say three or four people, and just really kind of ease into it. I think all of us feel a little shy. Some people are really, really desperate to get back and like, oh, I just want, let me in there. But I think a lot of us feel nervous. So I think having a small group and just being really gentle about it feels like the way to go.
And in terms of festivals and shows?
Nothing that I haven't got anything planned at the moment, actually. I mean, Unravel Festival happened in May, which is down near London, and I think that was really great. I think there were classes, but they obviously just managed small numbers and social distancing and everything. Yeah. I think there were quite a lot of people who felt nervous about the idea of going and being in such a kind of enclosed space. So I'm actually planning some walks around my local parks for people who are interested in learning about dye plants, where we can all just be outside, small numbers again. So it's a way of engaging in nature, but with a slightly different focus to just foraging for food plants or medicines or whatever. We can do it for dye plants. And, I think I've certainly seen this year what most people are finding solace in is nature or connection with that. I think that's something that I've always felt, but I think it's just really exploded in people's consciousness. And I think that's fantastic, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. I would agree on that one. And just walking together in nature and having this goal sounds awesome. We were actually going to do that with Vita Goldmeer just before everything started. We were going to go do that in the park here. Oh. And I love the idea of doing that. And I think online is great for master classes and for like more of the information and text and all of that. And then the hands-on, I think it would be really nice to go on one of those walks. Oh, but really? I also think that a lot of introverts have awakened. Is that right? Awakened.
Awoken. Well, I think you can use either. Go for it.
It's fine. So I think a lot of people are noticing that they actually were quite comfortable in smaller groups and having more time alone. Mm. So I'm curious to see how that will go. And in terms of not going to shows and everything, was that really hard on your business, or what is, because you dye the yarns, you sell the yarns. Do you still do some of the pouch making?
Yeah, I do periodic kind of runs of pouch making. Yeah. When I find some really special fabric, you know, or there's a particular woman, a lovely friend of mine, Lorna Reed, who is a beautiful embroiderer and stitcher. So we sometimes collaborate. I make the pouch and then she does the embroidery. So we try and focus on something, either some small imagery that's Scotland-based, or we're planning a seasonal dye plant pouch. So we'll might have a spring, some autumn and winter dye plants that, you know, just
awesome.
Where people can find inspiration from the beautiful, Lorna's beautiful stitching on the side. So I still do that periodically. So I dye yarn, I do that. As I said, I do some teaching, but it's mostly the dyeing at the moment.
Yeah,
it's certainly been a huge transition. You know, I think most people who make product of any kind have scrambled madly to find a new avenue. I mean, I think as knitters, we're incredibly lucky because we already have, like, we're already connected with a community who was used to doing things quietly on their own, who already had kind of like the skills to do it. So in some ways, it's we're in a perfect position really to service, you know, that need and that yearning for kind of lovely activities through lockdown. And I think in some ways I've probably lost some customers because I'm not going to festivals and things, but I've found other customers because people have either picked up knitting or they've come back to it or they've got really into it in a way they probably weren't before.
Yeah.
So I think it's, you know, I think it swings and roundabouts in that sense.
More of a shift than like a small dip. But a large shift.
I've definitely had a dip. But, you know, I wouldn't expect anything else. And I don't feel in any way begrudging of that. Like, I think we're at a point in time where people are worried and nervous about money. And, you know, Brexit's definitely had an impact.
Absolutely.
For a lot of us. Like, customers are really nervous. You know, there's big fees sometimes to pay. So I just have buckled in and just thought, what can I do with a little bit of the extra time that maybe I have because I'm not dyeing as much yarn because I'm not selling as much? And so I'm just about to start a course I'm going to be a student in a course with a fantastic group over in Canada. So they're doing the courses that they normally would do in person, which I was always dreaming about going and doing. I'm now going to be doing online with another friend of mine, Julie from Black Isle Yarns.
Yeah.
So we're going to undertake 2 or 3 months of study one day every week. We're going to get together online and go through the modules and learn. So, you know, I think for me, I've just seen it as an opportunity to have to think about how I do things and what's valuable and what I can bring to my own already established practice, you know.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of that rings true to my ears as well. Like shifting from the shop to the online world of knitting and then looking what you could do to help people, where you can use what you already know and make a change, but also make sure that your business is still sustainable to be able to keep doing it. Obviously, you did the same as me and okay, so now I have more time, I'll start studying.
Yeah.
And What other things did you think? Did you have any creative ideas in terms of marketing, in terms of selling?
At the beginning of last year, I started making kits for dyeing. So I find, at my workshops when people come, a lot of people already know a little bit about natural dyeing, but it's the steps like how to collect material, how much you can collect from a tree before you start to damage it, and what's responsible in terms of sourcing dye material. Also the mordanting process, which is basically a lot of different natural dyes won't form a permanent bond with fiber without what we call a mordant, which can either be a natural substance, well, can either be a salt or a metal or an organic, another kind of like soy milk, I think we've spoken about before, different mordants that help to make that kind of chemical bridge between the fiber and the natural dye. And so often people feel nervous about that step. And so I started making kits at the beginning of last year, which basically don't provide any of the dye, because there's quite a lot of natural dye kits which provide indigo or madder or different dyes. But for me, the joy of natural dyeing is going and harvesting yourself. And so what I've done is put together a kit which provides a 13-page kind of, booklet on all of the state, all the essential steps of natural dyes, plus a 4-page kind of table of about 50 different dye plants that, you would find near your house, I would find in my house. Most people around the world would find at least 10 plants on that list that they could collect easily and with mordanted yarn. So really it means that they have everything, people have everything that they need except for the dye material. And so for me, that's been the thing that really people have taken up a lot more. So even though people have been buying yarn through this period, I think more people have engaged with that side of actually doing the dyeing themselves. So I've tried to focus more on that kind of side of things, because, it's about giving people joy at a time where it's a little bit more difficult to find it. So
Yeah, and making the transition from what your expertise is and what do they need, and at the same time still get paid for it.
Absolutely.
Because this is an awesome resource, and I'm sure if you spend some hours online, you can find all of that online. And we talked about it before. There's a lot of free stuff out there. Mm-hmm. But just being the expert that brings it all together for them in a resource and a kit that you can like trust that is ready to go. Yeah. That's worth some money, right? Do you feel uncomfortable or comfortable with the connection of we're trying to do good in this world with things that we love doing, but we also need to make a living? How does that work in your head?
Yeah, there's such a tension there for me. I mean, I was brought up in a family where, you don't talk about yourself, you don't kind of blow your own horn. So it was like people recognize that, and if they don't, that's their like kind of loss. And so a lot of kind of self-dulling down, I think. It's really challenging for me. Like I'm terrible at promoting my own work. And I think it's something I see in a lot of people in our industry and in our kind of community in that sense. It's something I have to really challenge, and I've just engaged with a marketing kind of program because I'm so terrible at it. But I do feel like there's a lot of people who will try something once, be really excited about it, start a podcast about it, start writing about it, telling everyone they know about it. And I love that. Like I love the enthusiasm of people who feel really confident about sharing, even when they're only one step ahead of the people they're sharing with. And I really love that. But I also really value people who spend a lot of time quietly working away and developing skills. And I think we need both of those types of people or more, like I think there are many ways of inspiring. I don't reach the same level. I can't tell everyone about natural dyeing. I don't know everything about it. So I do feel like we need all of those different kinds of voices, but my voice is definitely a kind of a quieter one.
Mm.
But with that, the more I learn, also I'm starting to feel more responsibility of sharing because I've had the opportunity to study with different people and I've had the opportunity to spend time. I'm incredibly lucky to have this job. So, with that comes a responsibility, and I feel like online teaching and sharing posts and newsletters and all that stuff is something I now need to do more of, not like volume, but like quality of sharing. And I think with the kit, there's quite a lot in that kit. And I think with a lot of books and texts and things, when you first read something when you're a learner, you read it at a certain level and you get what you can absorb out of it. And then you go away and you play and you go, oh, what about that? And then you go back, hopefully, to the thing and you read it more. And each time you go deeper and deeper. And I think for me, giving people a comprehensive list of things that they need to consider feels more profound than giving like a one page, you know, here's how you do it. I am starting to recognize my own knowledge there and want to share it.
Does that answer? Yeah, it does. I'm going to loop back to the value of things. But first, I've seen your business from different angles, and I do feel that you are such an amazing teacher. And what you just explained, the really getting deeper into the matter, offering all this background information, not just the technique, but every time you teach something, you have really done the work. And you also have a great gift of communicating this to the group. And this is what I see so much, that you are multi-talented, absolutely. And some people then also say, but I suck at marketing, or I'm not comfortable with marketing. And marketing is actually one of the things that I'm really comfortable with. And then sometimes I feel like, oh, I wish we could all step it up like a little bit and have people do the marketing that are good at it, because I'm not saying that all of that talent kind of goes, it doesn't go to waste, but it could be more.
And I think sharing skills like that would be so fantastic.
That would be really fantastic. But, and I think there's ways to do it, but we are all such small businesses, and sometimes we invest in things that make us happy and feel like we are going to be enjoying things more. And if marketing is not your thing, you will not likely invest in it a lot. You're like, oh, I'll just put like a message on Instagram, I'll be fine. I'll just, on a good day, I will tape myself, and but not today because I have a sit or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's what I see in our industry, and especially the piece, if I can say so, that we are in, that's focused on consciously doing things, like really thinking things through, doing things intentionally. We're all such small businesses, and we kind of don't really want to grow. We don't want to be like big brands, because that doesn't really fit our souls as much. And at the same time, going back to what is the value of what we're doing, if we are all people that are so into it and so connected to it with all our being, and then we feel uncomfortable asking certain prices or talking about it even is an issue.
Absolutely.
So how do you think things should change? Are you like, oh, I can do this for a couple of years more?
I think we work in an industry that in some way feels like earning a living doing something that you love is kind of a little bit of a bad thing. Not a bad thing, but it's like a privilege. And it absolutely is a privilege. And with that privilege comes responsibility to do the best job we can, but it doesn't mean we shouldn't earn a living doing it. And I think that's a really interesting thing. I'm not sure why it's so prevalent in this industry and community. You know, please edit this out if you feel like it's not the right thing to say, or politic or whatever. But I do feel like it's a little bit about gender. I think an industry that's so heavily dominated or populated with women running their own businesses and doing things, and often that started as a job that they did alongside something else, so therefore isn't as legitimate. Somehow we feel like we apologize for that, or we can't claim that job and we can't claim that space. And I just, in my own personal experiences and also experiences professionally, I just feel like men don't have as much of a problem claiming space and asking for what they feel they deserve, even if they don't. You know, and I do feel like, I don't know if you agree, I just feel like it's
I do.
It's a factor, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know I think as women, we need to work on that, you know?
Yeah. But especially together.
Yeah.
Like do not like if another woman with a business decides they want to get paid for what they do. Sometimes people talk and sometimes they say that's crazy expensive. No wonder they're doing so well. I'm like, isn't that the thing? Isn't that we're running a business, right? Why can't we be successful?
Yeah.
But I think it's layered in a way. I think one of the things that is happening is we are so close to our customers. There's not really a boundary.
Yeah.
So we are customers of the other businesses and we connect to our customers really well. We work sometimes we work for them. We sometimes work with them. And if the customer then says, well, that's a lot of money, we go like, oh my God, I cannot do this. Mm-hmm. And just coming from it from a, I guess, more male angle where you go like, okay, what's it worth? What is the value? Not even just the hours you put into it, but just the value in general,
yeah.
All those kinds of things. And I feel like a lot of us are super uncomfortable with this part of our businesses because we respect people that kind of, what's the word? We're like a little wave and we go like...
Don't rock the boat, you mean?
Yeah, don't rock the boat. Do the pretty things, wear flowers in your hair, say green and environment, every other word, but never say, I'm also in it for the money.
Yeah.
Totally. But this is our job. So I think there's something really needs to change in the small businesses that we run to... start there and then also make sure that people that don't have that much to spend, there's ways to solve that. It doesn't mean that we cannot ask for the worth of our work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So,
and I think in that sense, it's about recognizing that the responsibility that I feel as part of that incredible privilege to do something so lovely and that I love is then doing the very best job I can in not only dying, but in terms of the materials that I source and the people I represent and all those things. And I think that's a really big ongoing lesson in terms of how to do that. But it doesn't negate, the value of doing it, you know?
Yeah, and I think especially in this field, we work from our hearts and our souls. I think it's super important. And I love that these businesses like yours and pulling the other consumers towards us. What I mean is the more commercial consumers that look at different brands and then one eye goes to your yarns and they're like, what's that? Mm-hmm. And then you start telling your story and slowly but steadily we tell our stories to a bigger audience. I think that's the idea.
Yeah.
We want to do good, right? We want to do good in the world.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's why we're doing it.
Yeah, definitely.
Are you a small business in the craft yarn wool industry and do you want to make changes becoming a more sustainable business, sustainable for yourself and the world, focusing on what your customers need, what the world needs and what you need, finding that balance? Do you feel like you never get the time to dive into these things? Do you want to get practical and work smarter instead of harder? Do you want to match your business to your values and share your vision with your customers, but you never seem to have time to really do this work? It's time to join our circle, because together with other business owners, we can really change things, big and small, from better packaging to inclusive communication. Holding each other accountable and meeting each other regularly without an overwhelming amount of edit work. This is where you really will make a change. Go to community.ja-wol.com and click BBBC tab on the bottom of the page for more information. The circle is open. Do you feel in a way that you are educating customers? Do you feel like that's a part of what you do? If you want to build or grow your business in textile crafts, why don't you join our online community for the small monthly contribution of only 10 euros, which is basically $10-ish. You get to hang out, learn from, and share your business and your personal craft journey with all the lovely people there. Support the podcast at the same time, and you get everything wrapped into one loving package. I would love to welcome you there. Go to patternshift.fm and click community. And while you're there, sign up for our emails so you'll never miss a thing.
Absolutely. So I listened to your other episode with the other Saskia, and it was a really interesting discussion about natural dyes and acid dyes and what's better and what's more environmentally sustainable. And I think, you know, the first thing that people assume about natural dyeing, and that I assumed about it when I first started doing it, was that it was better. And anyone who's been on the planet for any period of time knows that there is really no better. It's just decisions that you make. And around sustainability, I think natural dyes versus acid dyes is a really interesting question. The reason I'm bringing this up now is because in response to your question, is it about education? For me, there's no doubt that natural dyes requires more resources in some ways than acid dyes. So we can talk about that now, we can talk about that later, but it definitely requires things. So it's not any more sustainable environmentally, I don't think, than anything else. Nor is it any less sustainable, depending on what you do. I think it's just, you know, there are people doing everything in a really sustainable way and then in a really unsustainable way.
So that's why I asked you.
Obviously, there are things I do everything as sustainably as I can. But for me, the reason I think natural dyes is so important, firstly, I'm a plant nerd, so I completely love it. And the plant is as important as the colour that I achieve. So it's, for me, it's about the engagement with plants. It's about my relationship with them and learning. And I feel that that's also the value for customers, really. So the colours, of course, are important. Of course, I want to make really beautiful colours, and I hope that I do make people happy. But the thing that I want the most to get out of it is slowing down and thinking about where that comes from and everything that that then brings them. So I guess I kind of see natural dyes a little bit like, do you go out and buy your food at the supermarket from companies who possibly do it more sustainably than if you have an allotment?
Yeah.
Or do you grow it yourself and understand what it takes in the growing and therefore value the food more? And I don't think either of those things are better or worse, but it's about the engagement that natural dyes brings for me, for my customers, for people who come to workshops, and the immense joy that that then brings, and the learning in the sense of increased responsibility, the mindful consumption, because we recognize this is expensive because actually there's all these steps involved in making it. So I'm going to think of something really special and I'm going to wear that for years. And like, it's a whole picture that I feel comes from natural dyes. So education is at the core of that, you know, and not, I mean, teaching obviously is part of it, but it's just in every step of that process, hopefully, for people. You
know? Yeah, that makes so much sense. Mm. Yeah, it's a different fly route, like you flying into a different route. Yeah.
Different angle, for sure.
Different angle, yeah. And in terms of practical solutions, what are ways that you dye and the steps that you take to do it as consciously as you can and as environmentally friendly as possible?
So there are different ways of working with natural dyes. So just like an acid dyer buys a powder, like Saskia would buy powders, she has a range of different options of powders, some more sustainable, more less impactful than others. And there are natural dyes who work only from extracts. So with natural dyes, normally what I would do is I would use a raw plant material that I go out and harvest myself, not always, but a lot of it. I'll go out and harvest, basically make it kind of a big cup of tea. So I'll put my dye in a big bag, put that in a big pot with some water, bring that up to the simmer and hold, and then turn the heat off and let all the dye become extracted out into the water, say overnight. What some industrial dye companies do is they would do the same process. They would use natural dyes. They would make a huge big bath out of it. And then they would reduce the amount of water in the dye bath until they evaporated off completely. And then what's left is an extract or a powdered. So you can actually get powdered, which is that process, and then extracted, which extracts particular dye molecules from the powder. So some dyers will argue that actually that's more sustainable to dye that way from a powder, because industrial scale is usually often more economical.
Yeah.
And they only have to use this powder, so they basically just mix that with water, add it to the pot, add the yarn in, and there you go. So they actually would produce, they would use less energy in that process. And I agree with them in some ways. I think, you know, environmentally, I think that's a really great way to do it. But, you know, I go out and harvest a lot of material out in Scotland or in Glasgow as part of my kind of daily activity. So I don't have to pay any miles on that dye. Like, it's just stuff that I see growing in my neighbourhood.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of weighing out, you know, is time and air miles more valuable than energy, you know, that I have to use to heat up the dye bath and extract the dyes? And I don't know, like I'm interested to try and get someone to do a study on that, or to actually assess what I would use compared to somebody doing it with extracts, and actually assess the sustainability of that process.
And long-term or short-term, there's a big difference there as well.
Totally. So I think, you know, as I was saying, anyone who's been on the planet for any period of time will realize that there's just no easy answer. And I mean, I think everything we do, we can quantify it, but I don't know of any studies or anything that have been done around this particular stuff. So
yeah,
it would be an interesting process to undergo, actually, an assessment of that.
Yeah.
So basically I occasionally use extracts, but for me most of the joy is about collecting the material. And sustainability, as we were saying, is not just environmental sustainability, it's economic sustainability, it's also personal human sustainability. So for me, the joy of dying with plants is also a factor that I need and I want. And so it then means that other decisions I make maybe need to compensate a bit for that decision. Mm. But, you know, like, we try and balance. So I use mostly dye plants that I collect around myself. I also use as little energy as possible, but I have large dye pots that are made of steel, stainless steel. So what I do is I have like an industrial burner, which is relatively efficient in use. So I put the dyes in my big bag, in the water, bring the temperature up, and then turn it off. And because it's a super heavy stainless steel pan, the next morning I'll come in and the warmth is still in the dye bath. So yeah, the energy is concentrated in that steel in a way that it isn't if it's a thinner material. So that kind of decision is also important in terms of what gear we use. And then when I start dyeing with the dye, I will use the dye depending on what it is, I often use it many times in order to achieve really dark and then mid and then pale shades.
Mm-hmm.
So thinking about how many times we can use things obviously is a really big part of it. I then also use particular waste or exhausted dye materials to fuel indigo vats. So the thing has a second life and then a third life. There's a park just near my studio, so I'm able to take all my spent used dye material and not compost it, but pop it under the trees and let it kind of go back into the carbon cycle. So that feels like a really lovely and important part of it. But it also comes down to yarn choices for me, and I think balancing what I feel is important with what customers want is always a little bit tricky.
What's that thing, what your consumers want and what you want? Where do you meet and where do you not meet?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think I'm small enough that I don't have to make a huge, you know, like I don't have to make so many sales, so I feel like there'll always be people there who will relate to what I'm doing. But it's definitely, you know, how do you not get carried away when you see like LaPNME making these amazing yarns, you know, that are different to what you have, and you go, oh, maybe I should do that. I think we have to stay with what feels most relevant for us. And I think for me, I started spinning before I ever started knitting. So I've always been about the kind of woolly, you know, local yarns, fiber, minimally processed stuff. You know, but when I started dyeing, really all I had access to was more large scale, more heavily processed or more luxury bases, you know. Mm-hmm. Back in 2015, a lot of small producers, like small batch farms and stuff, people were growing at such small scale that they couldn't then afford to sell it on to dyers like me to buy these amazing woolly yarns, you know. They only had what they needed. I think it's really only in the last 5 years that wholesalers have started to see, oh, there is actually a market for rustic yarns or local yarns, and you know, people like Rachel Atkinson, who's tapping in to the local growers and actually finding a use for local growers' fleeces and taking the risk of having them processed into yarns. You know, all of that stuff is nourishing our industry so that we, more of us, are willing to take that risk, you know, to produce things and to know that somebody will value it and will buy it, you know. So I think, yeah. I think we have to listen to the voice inside us, but it is hard to kind of get sway.
And it's going back to the marketing bit of it. And sometimes I think that we at the level of producers are so much into all of the granules of how do we do things, where do they come from? And then it's really easy to just sell the colors and not sell the story, but it's the story. Like you were saying, the BNMA, it's a wonderful company, and it's amazing that they have such success with the yarns that they're making. It's a totally different product for a totally different group of people that I feel are more fleeting in a way. So the bulk of their work is to talk to new people the whole time. Like people go into the speckled world, and then they learn a little bit more, and then they move on, and then they have to get new people. Whereas I feel, correct me if I'm wrong, that dyers like you have more of a steady base of people that come back to you, just because step by step they'll get to know the story and how it's made, and learn to really appreciate all the energy and time and knowledge and expertise that goes into it. Mm. And I think I'm one of those people myself that I have enjoyed a speckle in my day, but
and I love Emmy's work, you know. It's
absolutely, it's just again a different product. And for the season that I'm in right now, I feel much more attached to a different kind of product. Again, which is not like that I don't like the other one, but something that you choose, and it feels more balanced for me right now. And I'm so very interested in hearing about all these stories. And that's also why this podcast is here, because we can share it with other people and share the background of why we are doing things. Is it successful what we're doing? What is successful? Because to some people, it's different to a lot of people. What would you say makes your business a success?
You mean,
it's an annoying question.
How do I know if it's successful? Yeah. Like, what is it that gives me that sense of I'm doing a good job?
Yes, exactly that.
It's a really good question. I think for me, obviously I need to make a living, you know, like that's fundamental. But, you know, and we don't get it as much at the moment because we don't get to go to shows. But what I was going to say is, for me, you still can get it online. You still get it through customers, engagement with customers, but is that people actually make the connection between where the yarns come from, why it's important, and why where the plant comes into it or the natural dye material. And, yeah, that they just feel, they just get the story, that they really make those connections and make the links to the point where it becomes in their mind, you know, something that might become an heirloom knit, or, you know, something that they just really, it's like they feel it, you know, they feel the importance of that in just a very small way, because, you know, yarn is yarn, but it's also really important, like fabric that we work with, you know.
Do you feel like when you're in shows, most shows will attract a group of people that is already interested in handmade products, usually, because we tend to choose our shows. But do you have to explain a lot while you're selling? Because in Holland, let me do the Dutch knitter. What? Why is it that expensive? I can get like 7 balls of yarn for that. But they don't get it at all. And I feel like in the show, when we were at with Saskia from Overzet Zeta, and actually a third Saskia too, we were at Edinburgh Yarn Festival, and it was so different from having a shop. Because that Dutch woman that I just did, I got that in my shop on a daily basis, like 70-80% of the time. But in a show, you have people who kind of understand.
It's like in English, we would say preaching to the converted, you know?
But do you still have to explain?
Yeah, it's a huge difference. It's a huge difference. But I do feel like natural dyes adds another level of, people are like, they might already understand why we're doing what we're doing. But I think they're intrigued about the natural dyes when they, and often people will come over and see the colours and they go, oh, it's natural dye. And so it starts a whole other conversation. But I actually find the most joy, well, I also find joy speaking with people who don't really get it, where you have to work a bit harder. It's a bit like, you know, the person at your job who never has a smile, and then like you work extra hard and then they smile. In some ways that is more, it's a more meaningful exchange, or not, it's not more meaningful, but it's equally meaningful, because you know, they're able to let down their barriers about why it's about why they would spend that much money, and I'm able to let down my barriers about why I have to defend the price it is. And actually it's like a meeting of, you know, of understanding the value of something and kind of really like going, okay, let's, like, they're going to do it, okay, and I'm going to support that. And like, it's just a really fun, I think that's a really fun thing.
You know? I think you'd probably be great at explaining, because you use the word defending, but you have such a positive way of talking about what you do. I wouldn't be able to do that sometimes. Sometimes I would go really into the negative aspects of defending, and it took me a long time to like mold this into something that's more positive. And one of the good things of closing the shop is I can talk to a larger audience now, like we said before. If you're online, you can talk to people that are already open to a certain way of intentional living. But sometimes I feel this group is so small. Like, is it not like a drop in the ocean? We're like, oh, people take care of the earth and of the animals and choose your products well. And I'm hoping that this will trickle through in the rest of their lives, or they're already doing yoga and eating organically and they never really thought about their yarns. Yeah. So it's a part of the puzzle, but sometimes it feels like a very small puzzle to me.
I know what you mean. And sometimes it can feel like a fairly privileged part of the puzzle as well, you know? And
I think yes.
And sometimes I kind of despair a little bit about that. I mean, I'm part of that. I'm very, you know, very privileged in my life. But I feel like we have to start. We just have to do it anyway. And I think we have to be mindful about it and humble, and not try and tell this whole thing of like, I make my own clothes, therefore I'm better than other people, or I'm more mindful, is just like such a crazy place to start. And I think, well, it's a place to be. I think we have to remember that it's not, you know, like what our responsibility is in that, and just be kind and humble and share as much as we can and do the best job, you know.
Yeah, I make my own clothes. Can I help you make yours?
Exactly. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Totally. It's about sharing that information. I think if we don't share it because we're worried about not making any difference, I've definitely fallen into that trap sometimes, but I feel like then that doesn't do any good either.
You know? So it's like let's please not forget to laugh.
Yeah, totally. Right?
Sometimes things get so serious.
Yeah. Absolutely.
We have to really respect and think and be open and all of that. But let's please also enjoy. And from talking to you, I definitely know that you're enjoying your work. And
I love it.
Getting that balance and hearing you talk about the circle of being sustainable to yourself by collecting the plants, then making the thing, explaining the thing to people, and then making a living, it makes a lot of sense. And that's why I love to talk to people that know so much and have so much expertise, because they have gone through every little corner of that journey. And the information about about your kettles, that you choose the right material for your kettles.
Yeah.
Kettle sounds like I'm talking about cows, pans, pots. Yeah. But all of that can only be achieved by having a heart, having patience, working, studying, and it all comes from a drive of wanting to do good work. Thank you for doing that good work.
Oh, gosh, thank you. It's a real honor and privilege to be able to do it, and I just hope I make it worthwhile. You know, I think I feel very lucky.
Yeah. Well, you make a big difference in a lot of knitters' lives. I know so many people that say, oh, Jules, she's lovely.
Well, thank you so much for doing this, because I think actually so many of us are just burrowed away doing what we do, but you know, nobody would find out very rare to actually hear podcasts or interviews with people who are where you're actually trying to have that particular focus, you know, of really getting people to be more mindful about decision making, you know. It's not just the latest yarn that you've bought, you know.
Yeah, I think we have those podcasts, and I think if people are open, like business owners are open to go a little bit deeper and be a little bit more open to how we can sustain everything and how we can find balance. And at the same time, hopefully people are listening that are learning something, either business owners or knitters, or preferably both. So tell me, what are the projects that you're working on now, and what are you looking forward to?
Well, I have a few different things on. I have a brand new yarn base, which I won't announce today, but it's a beautiful British spun and sourced yarn. It's already out there in the market with the people who make it already sell it, but I've just taken on as a new yarn base. So I'll be launching that in the next month or so. I'm just busily dyeing up the first batches of that. So I'm very excited about that.
Can you tell us what you can use it for best?
Yes,
just a little bit. Is it sock yarn? Is it
totally? It's actually to replace another yarn that I have, which is an alpaca silk cashmere, which I absolutely love, but it's only used for really for shawls.
That's
so
true.
This is just 100% wool, but it's a worsted spun wool. So I actually think it's fantastic for lots of things, which is the reason I got it. So it's going to be beautiful garment yarn, really lovely garment yarn for smooth kind of drapey but still woolly garments.
Nice.
Great for shawls. It's soft enough to go on the neck. I think it'd be really beautiful for colour work as well. I think it'll be like one of those ones that it just looks like super even.
Yeah,
really lovely. So that's really exciting.
Can't wait. Okay.
And in front of me, I also have on the table in front of me, I have a project which I'm working on at the moment, which is totally unrelated to dyeing, but I was given a very bedraggled cardigan that's going to be in an upcoming film in the UK, quite a big film, and it needed to be heavily darned. But it's an interesting project because I do a bit of darning, I teach darning, but normally somebody gives you something, and even if it's going to be visible mending, you want it to look nice and kind of new again, or you know, like relatively good. But this is an interesting project because it's set in the 19th century. It's a grouchy old man who gardens in this cardigan, so it has to be darned and functional but still look really old. So I'm really excited about thinking about that project and doing something different textile-based, you know? Yeah. Can I show you?
Yes. For the people in the club that actually get to see this as a perk to being in the club.
So it's a cardigan kind of jacket thing. I'm not sure if you can see. It's black, so it's going to be very difficult to show you. But
Oh, I can see.
So like a button-up cardigan, but the neckline, I had to fix that all so that it still is holy, but it's functional now. But the worst part about it, I have to show you this, is there's no armhole, armpit at all. So I have to basically remake the armhole. So that's that's a real exciting.
Exciting.
As a knitter, that's like a major nerd project, you know.
I
And
don't
then
even register those things as nerd projects anymore. They're just
they're just part of the
projects.
people, totally. And then obviously spring, summer dyeing. So those are my things at the moment. Yeah,
Yay.
so
Nice.
lots of fantastic stuff. Yeah.
Cool.
And
Well,
you?
I am actually launching the business club, which is going to be a little bit of a mastermind, really, to work together with small businesses and see
My
how we
gosh.
can work together to make things a little better.
I'm so gonna
So,
join.
you are.
That's what we need. We really need that because most of us are not cut out for, marketing.
And we are focusing on things like that. I'm actually working for them so they can tell me what they need, and then we work through themes. But I'm also thinking about bigger things, like making some sort of a promise. This business does not do this, and then make it clear on the website with either like a stamp or something. Just really mastermind together how we can make things better by doing small things, but doing them together to so that's
Maybe
coming.
I want to join.
Thank
That's
you.
not too
That would
late.
be lovely. No. It's you can come in at any time. You have a free trial period and you can come for a month and see if it's something you'd like, or stay for a year or longer. Everything's possible. We're just getting started, so I'm super excited about it. And then the Conscious Knitting Club is still going. And thank you so
Wonderful.
much for coming, Jules. I
Thank
love talking
you.
to you again. I've
Thank you
missed
so much.
you.
Oh, I know, me too. And really, yeah, have a wonderful summer, everybody,
Yeah, you
too.
too. Thanks.
Bye.
Wow, that was an amazing conversation with Jules. I was so wrapped up into the conversation that I completely forgot to ask her about her website and where we could reach her. So listen up. It's woolenflower.com, double O, double L, and also at woolenflower on Instagram. Jules is such a lovely person. She has this talent to make everybody she talks to feel like they are really seen and heard. She's so friendly and nice. And I've heard from countless people that really love her, and she's so well respected in our industry. It was a true honor to be talking to her and listening to her ideas, and I'm looking forward to all that she has to offer us in the future. Thanks again, Jules, for your time, for your inspiring ideas, and best of luck with Woolen Flower. 10 months and 20 episodes. I knew I would like podcasting. I've been on a local radio show when I worked in the music industry, and I would go to this program every month to talk about the bands that would play in the venue where I worked. And I really enjoyed that. And making my own podcast is really a dream come true in a way. So it turns out I was right. I do really love making this podcast. It feels small and big at the same time. I'm in my home office making it, talking to people all over the world, and getting reactions from listeners all over the world as well. A Small Alive was second best craft podcast in Japan at a certain point. Oh my gosh, crazy. Big in Japan. I make this podcast with my guests, but I quickly decided to look for an editor because, as much as I enjoy the editing process, it just takes away time to focus on the content and my online community. I looked for a native English speaker with a basic comprehension of Dutch. I found Allison, and I haven't looked back. Thanks, Allie. You do a great job. Looking forward, I would love to make this podcast more accessible to a wider audience. The transcriptions of the episodes can be made fairly easy using software, but when we want to turn them into a more comprehensive text that reads like a blog post and doesn't have crazy words or even, the weirdest things in it. Sometimes my accent gets in the way and then you get the craziest words. But we need more work hours to work through that because it takes up a lot of time. And the podcast has reached a level where I can hire Ali to do her work because of you, because of the patrons. And thank you so much for that. I'd love to get that extra pair of hands to make it as accessible as I can to have somebody to work out these transcriptions. A Smaller Life has a Patreon page with three different tiers. 5 euros that serves as a tip jar, 5 euros a month. Then there's 10 euros for the quote-unquote fans. You'll get some extra info, earlier access, unedited behind-the-scenes mini podcasts, things like that. And we offer a sponsor tier at 50 euros a month. This will give you, as a smaller business, 2 ads in one episode. I will make the ad for you, and your ad will run for as long as you pay the tier with 1 month minimum. This is a great opportunity for small businesses in our industry. For a crazy small amount, you'll reach your target audience in large numbers. And if you want to know how many people listen to this podcast, you can find all of that on podkite.com. We're reaching a lot of people, but more importantly, we reach the right people for you. So you are also welcome to mail me at info@ja-bol.com if you want to talk about your options. We have reached the end of the first season of A Smaller Life. While we take a break over the summer, we'll work on new ideas, sponsoring, and ways to share the story of small businesses in the yarn and wool industry with more people in better ways. All your ideas and feedback are most welcome. Mail me or send a voice message through our podcast website directly at ja-wol.com/blogs/podcast. Click on an episode and then click the record button. I would love to hear from you. I actually would love to hear your voices. It's a great little thing that you can leave those messages. So please do. Thank you all so much for listening. I love getting the messages. We need your support. And remember, you don't need to grab your wallet to support. Sharing, subscribing, and rating the podcast on Apple Podcasts is an easy and quick way to make a big difference. So please take a few seconds, minutes to do that for A Smaller Life. You can also subscribe to The Bellwether, that's our bi-weekly inspiring and thought-provoking mail, so you'll stay updated on interesting topics and new episodes for the future. Have a happy summer, everyone, and don't forget to eat and knit your fibers.